You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. It was a day 25 years in coming. The day a Wayne County judge threw out Desmond Ricks' murder conviction. It happened after it came to light that his 1992 conviction may have been based on faulty evidence produced by the Detroit Police Crime Lab. Desmond Ricks was finally exonerated. Michigan Radio's Jennifer Guerra spoke with Ricks just before a recent press conference following his release and asked him what his plans are now that he's a free man.
Just try to get my life back, you know, as best I can. You know, I mean, it's going to take some time and a little effort, you know, but I'm going to put the work in. I just want to be a citizen, you know, just law-abiding citizen, work, pay taxes, do the things that I didn't do before, you know what I'm saying? And I'm grateful to have this second chance, you know, to Mr. Moran, the clinic, and everybody that helped me, you know, to get me to this point that I am now. I'm truly grateful. Yes, I am.
The Michigan Innocence Clinic took up Ricks' case and won his exoneration. Its director, David Moran, thinks there are others who are victims of what was going on in that Detroit police crime lab. David Moran, always good to see you here on Stateside.
Thanks for having me back.
What was the crime Desmond Ricks was convicted of, and how was he convicted?
He was convicted of second-degree murder and an associated gun charge. So what happened on March 3rd, 1992, was that Desmond went with his friend Jerry Bennett to a Top Hat restaurant in Detroit. And the reason was is that Jerry Bennett told Desmond that he was going to go into the restaurant and meet a guy for a drug deal. So Desmond stayed in the car. Jerry went inside and came back out. And while Desmond watched from the parking lot, from inside the car, the other guy pulled a gun and shot Jerry Bennett in the head and in the abdomen. Desmond then leapt out of the car and ran away. And in the process of running away while the guy was opening fire on him, dropped his jacket. And when the police arrived at the scene, they found Desmond's jacket, which had some identifying information in it. And so they went to his house where he lived with his mother, Mary Ricks. And he was arrested, and they searched the house, and they found in Mary Ricks's nightstand her .38 caliber Rossi Special. And then lo and behold, on 2 days after the killing, on March 5th, 1992, the Detroit Police Crime Lab issued a one-page lab report that claimed that the bullets that had been pulled out of Jerry Bennett's brain and his spine matched Mary Ricks's gun. No other gun in the world could have fired it. And that was the basis of the conviction. Now, Desmond, who had actually witnessed the killing of his friend Jerry Bennett, had no idea who the killer was, did not know that guy, told his lawyer that that couldn't possibly be true. And so the lawyer then went to the judge and got the judge to appoint an independent ballistics examiner, a guy named David Townsend, who was a retired Michigan State Police ballistics examiner, to do an independent evaluation. And so the Detroit police delivered the bullets to David Townsend, and David Townsend then came back with his own report, which was that they were right, that Mary Ricks's gun, he test-fired Mary Ricks's gun into his own water tank, pulled the bullets out, compared it to the bullets that the Detroit police gave him, and they had the same marks indicating that they had come from the same gun. And so David Townsend ended up becoming a second prosecution witness. And that was the whole case. There were no eyewitnesses who saw what happened in the parking lot. There was a witness from the restaurant, a waitress, who had seen Jerry Bennett come in and meet with a guy, but she didn't see what happened in the parking lot afterwards. There was no motive given as to why Desmond Ricks would kill his friend.
It was this bullet.
It was the bullets. And the prosecution, frankly, said in the closing argument, you know, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, this case is about the bullets. And so that was the entire case against him, and it seemed like an airtight case. You had not only the Detroit Police Crime Lab, but you had an independent examiner who came to the same conclusion.
Yet, here we are, 25 years later, and he is exonerated because?
Because in 2008, the Michigan State Police did an audit of the Detroit Police Crime Lab Ballistics Matching Unit and found massive problems, irregularities. What they were doing in case after case was they were matching bullets to guns that didn't match. And Desmond Ricks heard about this, and he wrote David Townsend, the independent examiner, and said, you know, hey, did you see this? And David Townsend had seen it. And so he did something extraordinary. He went to the prison where Desmond Ricks was incarcerated and met with him, and he said, I'm going to confess something to you. I was suspicious of those bullets that the Detroit police delivered to me all those years ago, but I didn't say anything because I couldn't believe that they would be so brazen as to switch the bullets. But knowing what I know now, I think what they did was they gave me the bullets that they had test-fired using Mary Ricks's gun into the water tank. And so, of course, then, when I test fire Mary Ricks's gun into my water tank, they're going to match. And the reason he thought that was that the bullets that the Detroit police gave him were, in his words, pristine. And Townsend, with all these years of experience, knows that when you pull a bullet out of a brain or next to a spine in an autopsy, it's going to be mashed up, it's going to be mangled, and it's going to have stains on it from the bodily fluids. And the bullets they gave him were so pristine. So it bothered him enough that he remembered it all these years. But then once he got confirmation that there really was something rotten going on in the Detroit Police Crime Lab, he was willing to tell Desmond about it.
And leading to the exoneration, because without that piece of evidence, Wayne County prosecutors didn't have the evidence to retry Mr. Ricks. So let's talk about this Detroit Police Lab, as you say, shut down in 2008, right after Kwame Kilpatrick was forced to resign.
Right. Well, I should add that, you know, the process didn't end there.
Right.
We got involved shortly after David Townsend met with Desmond Ricks. We got involved in 2011, 2012, and we spent years trying to find the evidence. And we eventually confirmed that Mary Ricks's .38 Rossi had been destroyed decades ago. But through FOIA and persistence, we eventually found the bullets, the original autopsy bullets pulled from Jerry Bennett's body. And they were horribly mangled and stained, exactly as you would expect. We showed those photos to David Townsend. He said, these aren't the bullets I examined. And then we got a court order this year, 2017, from the judge to have the Michigan State Police analyze those bullets to see. And we got two reports in the Michigan State Police. The first report indicated that the bullets were so mangled that you couldn't have matched them to any gun. And then they did a further analysis, and they said, well, one of the bullets, you can see very faint traces of lands and grooves. These are the marks that a barrel of a gun makes as the bullet is flying out of it. And it was a 5R, which means that there are five lands and grooves with a right twist. But a Rossi 38 is a 6R. So not only is it that these bullets couldn't have been matched to Mary Ricks's gun, Mary Ricks's gun was positively 100% excluded. And so the only conclusion that anyone can draw from this is fraud. There's no way that Mary Ricks's gun could have been matched to the bullets pulled from Jerry Bennett's autopsy. And then once they knew they were going to get caught, because the judge had appointed an independent expert to evaluate the bullets, they switched the bullets, just as David Townsend suspected, so that he would confirm their match.
Which fits everything that I've got a New York Times story, for example, from September 25th, 2008, by Nick Bunkley, quoting then interim Mayor Cockrell, calling that audit that led to the shutdown shocking and appalling. A retired state police official named David Balish said of the errors and sloppy work from the Detroit Police Crime Lab, I would have never anticipated that it would have been this systemic. It's almost incomprehensible. And he suspected at that point in 2008 that the findings of that audit could lead to payouts of hundreds of millions of dollars in lawsuits. How many more wrongly convicted inmates do you think, David, are out there, more people like Desmond Ricks?
I would guess dozens, possibly scores. Ricks's case is unusual because the gun was really the whole case. In some of the other cases, there may have been fraud in matching it, but there's other evidence that would sustain the conviction. But I would guess that there are probably dozens more people who were convicted entirely or almost entirely based on a gun match that was a fraud.
Is this, from what we know of the audit and what's been said since, was it because corners were being cut because the lab was overworked and understaffed, or was it a deliberate attempt to get someone convicted even with false evidence?
We've seen these crime lab scandals all across the country, and crime labs have been shut down or suspended because of fraud like this. The West Virginia State Police Crime Lab, the Oklahoma City Crime Lab, the Houston Crime Lab, the Massachusetts State Police Crime Lab, even in the FBI Crime Lab, which is considered the very best of them all.
The gold standard? Yeah.
Yeah. There has been fraud. People have gone, in some cases, have been prosecuted for the fraud that they have been committed. The problem is, with crime labs in general, and the Detroit Police Crime Lab is a great example of this, is that they're not independent of the police. And so the way that you advance as a crime lab analyst is you make your commanders happy by matching guns to bullets or blood to victims or whatever the evidence that needs to be matched is. So there is a incentive for dishonest people to make the evidence match even if it doesn't, so they can get on the stand and become the prosecution star witness and make everybody happy, and that's how you become a star. And so I don't think the vast majority of people who work in police crime labs are dishonest. But all it takes is one or a few, and you get scandals like this. And you have the recent example in Massachusetts where the woman, Annie Dukin, declared thousands and thousands of samples were whatever the drug the prosecution claimed it was, but she actually never bothered to test them. So she just was making up the results and being a star witness in case after case after case. And we've seen these cases around the country. And what we really needed to have independent crime labs.
That's the answer.
That's the answer. In 2009, the National Academy of Sciences was commissioned by Congress to examine the state of forensic sciences in the United States. And the short answer was, with the exception of DNA, it's dismal. And they came out with 13 recommendations as to how we can improve forensic science in the United States. But the most important one, I think, was to make crime labs independent of the police, make them independent state agencies so they can give the bad news to the police. The detective who wants to, you know, match the gun to the bullet, they can tell that detective, sorry, it doesn't match, and there won't be any career repercussions for that forensic analyst. That's the problem that we have now.
Is that operating in anywhere?
Yes. New York State, unfortunately, is the only state so far that has adopted the 2009 National Academy of Sciences. They have an independent state agency, an independent state crime lab. No other state has done it yet. There's great institutional resistance to this because a lot of these forensic scientists or forensic technicians who work in the crime lab think of themselves as cops first, scientists second. In fact, many of them were sworn officers and then transferred to the Forensic Science Division. And so they don't want to be independent of the police, but that's really what we need. We need a cultural shift. So these people see themselves as arbiters of justice and science and not helping put the bad guy away. Because if they're doing it right, in many cases, they're going to say, well, that guy may be a bad guy, but he didn't do this.
Is there any chance, do you think, of filing criminal charges against the people who were involved in Desmond Ricks' lab analysis?
Don't know. The statute of limitations will obviously come into play. It's been 25 years. And I just don't know what crimes may have been committed here and whether the statute of limitations would not have run on any of them.
And at this point, Michigan State Police crime labs are still doing the work. So that what happened in 2008 when it was all taken away from the Detroit Police Crime Lab and given to the Michigan State Police is still in effect.
Right. So the Michigan State Police, I believe with the exception of fingerprints, and I could be wrong about that, does all of the crime lab work that was formerly done within the Detroit Police Crime Lab.
If I'm sitting in prison right now based on a conviction that had the Detroit Police Crime Lab involved, what would I be thinking?
Well, if you didn't do it, you would be thinking, I told you so. We're already starting to get some letters in light of the Ricks exoneration. I expect we're going to get a lot more letters, some of which I think will lead to exonerations. But I think the next step is that we need an independent investigation going back to the 1990s. So after the debacle in 2008, the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office took on the task of going back and looking at cases from the ballistics unit, but they only agreed to go back 5 years to 2003. And at the time, I objected to that when I was consulted by the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office. I actually vociferously objected to that because I said some of the same people who were implicated in the state police audit have been there for decades, including the very guy who did the analysis in Desmond Ricks's case. And so there's no reason to think that if they went bad, they only went bad in 2003. And, you know, it's a nice round administrative number, go back 5 years. But there's no reason to think that the problem only cropped up within that five-year period. And so what we need is to have an analysis going back at least as long as some of these characters who are implicated in the audit, some of these characters who are implicated in the Ricks case were working at that lab. And I really don't think that the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office, you know, with all respect to the efforts they made with the previous effort back in starting in 2009, I don't think they're the right entity. And one of the major problems is that all the top people in that office, or virtually all of them, were prosecuting cases in the 1990s as line prosecutors. So just asking them to go back and look at their own cases, and I'm not saying they're going to be dishonest about it. It's just human. It's going to be very hard for them to go back and fairly look at cases that they personally prosecuted and say, you know what, we put the wrong person in prison because of flawed forensic evidence.
How is Mr. Ricks launching into his – it's very early, but how is he launching into his new life as a free man?
So far, very good. I mean, 25 years. So we picked him up at the prison 2 weeks ago. We drove him out, had lunch with him. And we showed him how to use a cell phone so he could talk to his daughters. He has two adult daughters. One of his daughters was less than a week old when he was arrested in March of 1992. Both of them live in the Detroit area. Both of them are nurses. And he's now met his six grandchildren. He's never met any of his grandchildren before. We've been working to try and get him his documents back together so that he can get his license. We've been trying to find his birth certificate. We've been trying to help him in all of these ways. But he has a job, I'm happy to report, in Southfield. And he has an apartment within walking distance of that job. And hopefully soon he'll have a driver's license so he can drive around as well. He has been unrelentingly positive. I mean, it is an extremely difficult experience to be exonerated. It's incredibly disoriented to come out of prison into a different world 25 years later. He was 26 when he went to prison. He's 51 now. But if anybody can make that transition successfully, it's Desmond Ricks. He is a relentlessly positive. He does not have anger. He wants to get on with his life. As he said, we had a news conference today. He walked out of prison and he said, "I want to become a taxpayer." That's the kind of guy he is.
David Moran, director of the Michigan Innocence Clinic at the University of Michigan Law School. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.